Greetings, this is James Gillen, and I'm your host, and we've got another great show. We've got Courtney Brown back, and did an amazing show last time, and he's got a lot of updates for us. And he's a mathematician, a social scientist who teaches at the Department of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. He's independent of his work at the university. He's also the leading scholar on the subject of remote viewing. It is done using procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that are derivative of those methodologies. And he's also the founder of Farsight Institute, and he's got a lot under his belt. But I want to get this information out, and we only have an hour, so I'm going to bring him on the show. So, Courtney, are you with us?
I'm here, James. I want to thank you for inviting me back. It's really great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. I know you've got a couple major updates that we wanted to get out to the people, so I didn't want to lose a lot of time here, but maybe we should just, I guess we can go wherever you want to go. You might want to lay a little foundation first, and then we can go on to the updates.
Sure. Well, there's two really important things. That is, first of all, we completed our climate project, which ended June 1st, 2013. And that was really interesting and terrifically successful in a very interesting way. And then the second thing we had is the completion of our Atlantis project, where we have identified first, absolutely without doubt, no more folklore or anything like that, where this ancient technologically advanced society of humans, us, was, what they were doing, how they destroyed themselves, the whole story. They are our ancestors, and we know the whole thing. We know where the ruins are. We have pictures of the ruins. We've got great remote viewing results. But basically, remember that remote viewing is a mental procedure that's used to transfer information across time and space. It was developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, and it has a long track record. And the people that I work with at the Farsight Institute are trained by former military people, and they are the best military grade or better remote viewers on the planet. And we are the only venue, science venue, where we have these open public demonstrations and experiments where we do these things. Public are invited to verify the data collection process, to see our results, see the sessions. We're a nonprofit. That's www.farsight, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeingfar.org, O-R-G, because we're a nonprofit. And we serve the public like no one else has. So this is what we're doing. And so I thought maybe we could just start with the climate project, because that was so riveting. And that took 5 years to complete. And it was really, really spectacularly interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I know, right now, a lot of people are talking about global warming, and I think it's more appropriate to call it climate change because we're all over the place. We have record floods and cold temperatures as well as record heat. It's
right off the scale. Now, what we did, we had this project called the Climate Project starting in 2008, and it ended June 1st, 2013, starting June 1st, 2008. It's a 5-year time span. And we started this with the idea of seeing if remote viewing would be sensitive enough to be able to detect minor climatic differences, minor climatic change, maybe a few more storms, things like that, maybe a little rise in the sea levels, things like that. So we were not expecting anything big, but the results came in humongous, like huge change, and it included some type of meteor events that would affect right before June 1st, 2013. With a very significant meteor impact. Now, the idea with what we do, we have studied extensively and actually got a major study published in a leading peer-reviewed scientific journal, the idea of multiple universes, of there being many and infinite variety of parallel realities that operate along with us. And so that is crucial to our research. And so to understand our climate project, from the very beginning, way back in 2008, it was presupposed on the idea of there being multiple realities. And we did this major study just on multiple universes itself. And those results can be found, a good PDF copy of it can be found on our website at farsight.org, right on the homepage. Scrolling a little down, there's a brown banner saying leading peer-reviewed research. And click on it, you can read the article yourself. The idea is not new to physics, and it's slowly taking over. The original idea in physics is that there's only one reality, and this reality coalesces or it bursts into existence following the interpretation of quantum mechanics that was often called the Copenhagen interpretation, which is one reality bursts into us and we just are it. Mm-hmm. But this was challenged in 1957 by Hugh Everett, who came up with that other world's interpretation in which infinite number of realities can exist and not bump into one another simply by having their quantum signature or their ultimate, you know, the frequencies upon which each one is based to be different. And it's very, very similar to the idea of listening to a radio where you're listening to one station and there are other stations broadcasting, but you're not hearing them. Because you're not dialed to them. And similarly with a television, you see a realistic picture, but you're not seeing other stations because you're not on that frequency with the television. And our brains are essentially a very advanced hologram generator where it selects out the frequencies you want for this one reality. And remote viewers are able to do their work because we train remote viewers to be able to let more in. Literally like stretching your muscles. Well, we train the remote viewers to pick up things, to be aware of things that they normally would be screening out with their brain. It takes a long time to get the brain used to doing this, but once it's done, you become comfortable with it. These remote viewers can work miracles. It's really great under totally squeaky clean scientific conditions. So what we got with in 2008 were the idea of huge climatic changes and some meteor stuff. So this is totally unpredictable from a climatic meteorological perspective, especially the meteor content. Now, what happened was very interesting. Normally, over a 5-year time span, you'd expect very minor climatic change. And in 2008, nothing could be predicted except that the weather would be approximately the same in 5 years, in 2013, as was in 2008. But we were picking up major change. Plus these coastal things due to these meteor impacts on water. Mm-hmm. Okay, so remember, with the understanding of multiple realities, at every moment of the now, I'm sort of cutting to the chase now, but at every moment of the now, you branch off with multiple realities, meaning there is no single reality that's a future for anybody. There is no single future. Mm-hmm. There are only, from every moment of the now, multiple futures. They branch off in multiple directions based on frequency differences. There is nothing solid in the universe. Physicists have never found anything solid in the universe. You say your television is solid, your computer is solid, your car is solid, your body is solid. It's not true. You break that down, you get molecules with a lot of empty space. You break that down, you get atoms. You break that down, you get subatomic particles. You break that down, you get smaller particles. They've never, ever found a solid billiard ball type particle, ever, period, full stop. They've never found anything solid. Only thing they find are frequencies, waves that interact in a state that they call superposition. And those superposition are called wave packets, and those wave packets are gatherings of waves that produce events that we call physical things, such as the materialization of a photon or an electron or something like that, or us. Mm-hmm. Well, this was highly controversial in physics back in 1957, but it's slowly changing among the younger generation of physicists. These are graduate students and assistant professors, people who are just getting tenure, things like that. Approximately, of all physicists, about 18% of them believe that the multiple worlds interpretation of physics is correct. That means a majority are still hanging on with the Copenhagen interpretation, but the tide has changed. They will eventually wither and die. They will eventually retire and go away. And these newer physicists, which are about 18% of them right now, are going to replace them. And it is the single most important real big finding of the remote viewing phenomena that we have the ability to actually witness other realities. There is no single future. You cannot predict a future. It is impossible. And that's what we were saying way back in 2008. Because at every moment of the now, there are multiple futures. Like right now, James, you and I are talking. an hour from now, there's an infinite variety of different futures that all come out of this exact moment of you and I talking. So we have a single point of origin, but at every point of origin, multiple futures burst out. You can't predict a single future because all of them come from this moment. Mm-hmm. And this is true of all other moments. It's hard to wrap your head around, but life is more complicated than what you saw when you watched Ozzie and Harriet. I mean, life is complicated, and existence is complicated, and we're entering a realm of a new understanding of physical reality. It will also explain how the extraterrestrials visit here. They don't break the speed of light limitations, from a relativistic point. The speed of light limitations simply don't relate to them. It doesn't relate because you're not using that type of propulsion, like rocket propulsion, that runs in the speed of light limitations. You're using something completely else, which is to modify the frequency, sort of average frequency for an entire ship using electromagnetic stuff to match someplace else. And that someplace else, then you become into a state of superposition with that someplace else, and you literally go there. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the ability to transfer not just information across time and space, but physical objects as well across time and space, and that's how those ships actually get here. But that's another story, that's a different thing. The basic idea is what we did was we had this event, we had this data saying huge climatic differences and some meteor events. And lo and behold, what happened when 2013 came around, the world has gone absolutely crazy with meteorological changes, all of which were totally unpredictable in 2008. There's a website that was being maintained by one of our remote viewers who was involved with the project, and that website is called www.climatechange2013.com, and that was being maintained by Daz Smith, who's one of the greatest remote viewers on the planet. And in the news section, if you just click on the news section for that, he has page after page after page of just incredible off-the-scale weather things that are occurring, from huge flooding all throughout Europe, China, India, to, you know, record-breaking snow in May in Britain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. And we, you know, our tornado we had in Oklahoma. I mean, it's just nonstop. And apparently the United Nations is going to come out with what they consider a report that will scare the wits out of everybody in September, with regard to climate change. So all of this was unpredictable in 2008, but that's what the remote viewing data said. So it's very clear. Now, what about the meteor stuff? Now, remember, in multiple realities, there is no single future. Well, in February 2008, we had two enormously important meteor events that were totally unpredictable in 2008 from any normal means. We had the approach of DA-14, an asteroid, which missed the planet by a whisker, and it was approaching from the southern hemisphere. And we had the impact of the large meteor over Russia. Now, the interesting thing about the large meteor over Russia is a very good video was made of that. Lots of videos were made of that. Everybody's got a video camera these days. And a very good video was made of that and uploaded immediately, showing that when the meteor came in, something came from behind very quickly and hit it and fragmented it and broke it into pieces. You've seen that video, right?
Yeah, I saw that. I said, boy, that was divine intervention. Because if that would have hit in its solid state, I mean, we would have had
If it actually hit without being fragmented above Russia as in its solid state, it would have produced an explosion the equivalent of 50 atomic bombs of the size that destroyed Hiroshima. It would have been absolutely unbelievable. So, but what was that thing? There's only three possibilities. The first possibility is that it was another meteor that came in and hit it. But the possibility of that happening is so remote, you can just basically forget it. So the only other two possibilities are that it was either human intervention or extraterrestrial intervention. If it was human intervention, it would have to have been a anti-ballistic missile system that was operated by the Russians or the U.S., Now, if that did happen, to catch a meteor that's coming out of the blue, you'd have to have your guns drawn and your triggers cocked. I mean, you'd have to be ready to shoot, because to catch something like that, coming in that quickly, you've got to be ready for it. Which means something must have alerted them to the idea that they should be looking for it. Which brings us to the Climate Project. The Climate Project came out in 2008. Now, when you know for absolute certain the military, not just the U.S. military, but other militaries, look at our results. I mean, some of the military or people are on our board of directors. I mean, yeah. We know they monitor us. So the point is, we had this Climate Project. Now, if the military was aware of our remote viewing results, they're not going to simply say, oh, wow, that's interesting. They're going to say, hey, look, if that's possible, let's be ready. And so they would have been ready. And so if it was a military-like anti-ballistic missile system, our Climate Project is likely to be the reason that happened, which is how you create a new timeline. That's exactly how multiple universes occur. You actually watch something in one timeline, bring that information back, change something so that that timeline doesn't reoccur in your timeline. So that's exactly how it works. Now, the other thing it could have been is one of the worst kept secrets on the planet Earth is that the U.S. and presumably some other governments, Russians and so on, maintain some extraterrestrial contact with some extraterrestrial species for various favors. So there's some technology transfer in exchange for some whatever favors. And if you were a high governmental official and you had heard about the possible meteor events, what would you do? Would you say, oh, that's interesting? Or would you go to the ETs that you do have contact with and say, hey, if this is happening, take care of it, will you?
Yeah.
So, and they would have done it because they have something at stake. Okay. So if it was an extraterrestrial intervention, that would have made sense, again, due to our Climate Project. So this would mean that they could have easily, smashed the meteor and fragmented it. But that also means that they could have nudged DA-14, the asteroid, which is why it didn't hit us. Mm-hmm. So that's, now, what, you know, I mean, they could have, and what, when they would have done that is, ideally, when it was farther away from Earth, the very slightest nudge would have moved it just a whisker away, which is why it didn't hit us. Mm-hmm. Now, some people were, when they looked at our results and said, hey, the meteor impacts didn't happen. You must be, the remote viewing is proven wrong. You know, that's the difficulty in dealing with public experiments where you're showing results to people and trying to explain things to people. You can explain it, you know, to your horse. Yeah. And then they come back and say, where are the impacts? So the idea here is our research is based on the understanding of multiple realities. So you will never get something exact when you remote view the future. But what you will get is something that corresponds with. And what we found that corresponds with is huge climatic change and some meteor events affecting the planet. And that had the potential to be devastating. And that's exactly what we got. In addition, we were lucky enough to actually capture on video evidence that the devastating potential was mitigated by literally intervention.
Yeah.
Meaning the Climate Project itself might actually have been why so many people were not affected as seriously as it could have been. So that was it. Now, in mid-February 2013, we came out with an update, and I was on video when I published it in YouTube in 2013, mid-February, February 16, saying that the meteor events that occurred in mid-February satisfied the meteor content of our remote viewing data, given the idea of multiple timelines. So in mid-February 2013, I stated publicly that we should expect no further large meteor events to occur before June 1st, 2013. So that was another prediction, and yes, that in fact was it. That worked. So this has been very successful from that perspective. Now, some people may not completely understand that. They may say, well, you know, where's the impacts? But, you know, you just have to keep telling people and teaching people over and over again until they finally get it, that we are dealing, the most important result we have ever come up with is the clear understanding that we really do live in a universe of multiple parallel realities that simultaneously coexist with ourselves. And that's really interesting.
Yeah, there's a... There's an old saying, the best prophets are the ones whose prophecies don't come true, you know, because they reached enough people and they created a change, you know.
That's exactly right. If you have a prophet that gives a prophecy of something happening, well, you then have the information to change that. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how multiple timelines work. It doesn't mean that the prophet was wrong. It means that the prophecy was used to create another potential.
Exactly.
And that's exactly how it works. And now, if June 1st, 2013 rolled around and there was no evidence of any potentially disastrous meteor stuff on the planet, well, then people could say, well, it looks like the remote viewing was just simply wrong. But this was a once-in-a-lifetime event. Mm-hmm. Both DA-14 and the huge mushroom meteor, coming within 24 hours of each other, that was a once-in-a-lifetime event. I mean, that... Yeah. I don't know about your life, but in my life, nothing like that has ever happened.
Well, there's, you know, there's one thing.
And we haven't had anything similar to that since the so-called Tunguska event, when that goes back to, you know, the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah, well, to back up your story there, I mean, I watched that footage, and what I saw looked like a ship that I've seen ships like that quite a bit, that it looked like it went right through the meteor and kept on going. And so,
well, whatever it was, it hit it from behind, it fragmented it, and it hit it so hard that pieces of it flew out in front of it.
Yeah.
And so something absolutely definitely hit that meteor.
Yeah, and I played that over and over, and I enlarged it, and I watched it, and I said, whatever hit that meteor seemed to pass right through it.
Yeah.
Which then
immediately after that, some Russian official made a comment that this was an anti-ballistic missile system.
Event.
And then that was taken down. Uh-huh. And then other videos have come out claiming that the original video was disinformation, which is perfect. Because in my opinion, if you look at those other videos, they're classic disinformation themselves, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, if you do say it's something real coming out like that, one of the things that you must expect is that there will be disinformation about it.
Oh, yeah.
They want to sow. And so you sort of look for it. And sure enough, it comes out. And so there's a lot of stuff that really indicates that original footage was as real as you can get. And it does back exactly what we would have expected.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that we kept getting information that the ETs are doing a lot of batting practice on our behalf, and so
yeah, there was a lot of meteor activity during the first half of this year. I mean, a lot.
Yeah,
it was like people were just like saying, "What the heck is going on?" I mean, even the scientists were saying it wasn't just those two big things. It was like there's a lot of meteors coming in.
Yeah,
and they even saw one in their own eyesight without even needing a telescope, impact the moon. Now, the moon gets lots of meteors, but it's very rare that you can actually see one with the naked eye. Oh, yeah. And this all happened during that time period. There's been a lot of meteor activity, and all of which was unpredictable totally in 2008. Yeah. None of it was known or expected.
Well, a few and more so, have just missed us as well. They tell us after the event, but I keep hearing over and over again that another meteor just went whizzing right by us, and
absolutely,
and they don't tell us till after it went by.
Yeah, you know, this happens all the time. And so anyway, so not only did we have a very successful conclusion of the project, but come around mid-February, we were able to say that the events that occurred in mid-February matched what we were expecting, and nothing more should be expected, and in fact, that's what occurred. Mm-hmm. So this is an example of how remote viewing can be used, both to bring information from the future back to the past, to use it, or back to the present, use it, and then to move on from it. So, by the way, these are all available on our website. Remember, we're a nonprofit. Oh, and if any of your listeners didn't hear the update when it came out in mid-February 2013, they can sort of say, well, I didn't hear about it. I mean, well, I was expecting this impact. Well, you know, whose fault is that? We have a free newsletter, if you'd allow me just to plug it for a second.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
On our nav bar at farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far.org, O-R-G. If you look at the bottom of the nav bar, there's a big banner saying subscribe to our free newsletter. Just click on it, put in your name and or screen name or whatever you want to call yourself and your email address, and bang, you're there, and you will get our free newsletter. We never give out the addresses to anybody, period, full stop, no exceptions. And secondly, we rarely send out announcements, so you don't get any spam from us. If you ever get something from us, it's you know, maybe once every couple months we send something out. It's important. And that was where we sent out the, we announced major projects, major new results from that. So if you want to hear what we're doing, we are a nonprofit. We do not buy advertising space. We do not market our stuff by, you know, waving flags in front of people's faces. The only way we do things is by announcing it on the newsletter. And so I even encourage radio hosts to get the newsletter so that they know when to invite me on to talk about something, because yeah, otherwise it's, you know, it takes us a long time to come out with a new project.
Yeah.
And by the way, that brings us up to the Atlantis project. That's our latest project. And again, we just announced that on our newsletter, and the DVD for it came out just a couple weeks ago, and that's the most exciting project that I think we've ever done.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, it seems like we're repeating the same thing right now. We're repeating the same program that took us down in the past, and hopefully through education about what we did in the past, that, you know, through your work, we won't recreate that same scenario.
Actually, that's exactly correct, James. So basically what happens is, if you go to our homepage at farsight.org, you'll see a big banner right in the middle of it saying, Atlantis, the true story we must learn from our past. Mm-hmm. Now listen, a lot of people have talked about Atlantis, the mythological Atlantis, the legendary Atlantis, Atlantis this, Atlantis that. It's a lot of talk. No one's actually had real solid data of what actually happened, where, when, and so on. Mm-hmm. However, this has now changed. We now have the real solid data. We know exactly what happened, and we knew we have a perfect history of the last few days of that civilization and what happened to it. Now, this is not some ancient civilization on a distant planet in another galaxy. This is us. These are our ancestors. They are our granddaddies and grandmommies. They are us. And we destroyed our planet. And we think that this is about only 70,000 years ago. Now, if you look in our nav bar, the second link on our nav bar is Atlantis. And you click on that, right there you see the pictures of Google Earth of the ruins on the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And you also see that there were two locations. Now, there were two versions of Google Earth underwater, and it was interesting. It took us a year to collect these data using two of the best military-grade remote viewers on the planet, Dick Allgaier and Deborah Duggan Takagi, and they work with the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild procedures, and they studied under Glenn Wheaton, who came out of Special Forces. And these viewers, while we were doing it and wrapping up our project near the end, under totally squeaky clean, blind conditions, Google Earth announced a new version of its underwater imagery, Google Earth 2.0. Now, in the first version, there were some scientists who were claiming that the anomaly on the bottom of the ocean that we were looking at was a result of what they call ship tracks. Now, sonar ships take these images on the bottom of the ocean, and unless they go in perfect overlapping paths, they produce what's called a ship track. And what a ship track is, right underneath where the ship travels, the imagery is really clear. And then off to the sides is fuzzy. So you get two perfectly parallel lines with clear imagery in the beginning, in the middle, rather, and on the outside of the two parallel lines, everything's fuzzy. So that's what a ship track looks like. And this anomaly on the bottom of the ocean, which is about 1,000 miles off of the coast of Morocco and Spain, west of Morocco and Spain, that doesn't look at all like ship tracks. And so I looked at that and I said, those aren't ship tracks. That's nuts. And so, but right before we were finishing up with our remote viewing, Google Earth came out with a brand new version of the underwater imagery, and most of the anomaly, not all, but most, was erased.
Wow.
And so then the new explanation for that was that it's all been cleaned up. We fixed it. And I looked at it and I said, that's not been fixed. I looked at it and I said, what's been applied is extreme image compression. Now, Google Earth has to deal with image compression because the file sizes of original pictures are so large. But if you do it to the extreme, then all detail gets washed out because the color gradients are removed. Mm-hmm. And what the evidence of that is, you get huge patches that have exactly one color. And if you change it to shades of gray, you can really see it clearly. This exact single color follows the pixel lines, and there's nothing visible in the middle because all of the color variation is wiped out. And that's what you see with the new version. And so what basically happened is, in my opinion, it's clear as day, nothing was fixed. The images were simply erased.
Yeah.
And that's, in my opinion, what happened, because it's clear that the extreme level of compression, I'm not saying that any academic or scientist or institution, you know, willingly tried to corrupt the governmental, corrupt the data, the Google Earth data. What I am saying is that these data are governmental data, and the government can do anything they want with the data before any scientist or institution gets their hand on it. Mm-hmm. These are collected by the U.S. Navy. And so these are governmental data. People have to remember that Google Earth stuff comes from the government.
Yeah.
And so especially the underwater stuff comes from the government. So, you know, in my opinion, really what happens here is a classic wonderful thing. Right as we were finishing up our stuff, the evidence was partially erased. I mean, you can't get anything better than that. And the explanation for what happened is as implausible as you can imagine, because you can just simply look at the pictures themselves and see that this is an issue of extreme image compression, in my opinion. And now we also looked at a site in near Antarctica where you get these rectangularly placed, like a checkerboard, holes in the ground. And under the new version of Google Earth 2.0, actually they're still there. Not quite as blaringly obvious, but still very visible. They're obviously artificial. So we went to look at it. By the way, there's lots of digs going on, military digs and other digs going on in Antarctica right now by the Russians as well as the U.S. I mean, and they're not just digging to look up rocks. What they're going after is artifacts. I mean, they know full well that there was a technological civilization on this planet, mm-hmm. and they're trying to figure it out. So anyway, the DVD puts all of the remote viewing stuff together. Now, all of the remote viewing data are available for free right on our website. But the DVD, which you can see on our, you can see actually the first 15 minutes of it for free just by clicking on the Watch Now button, mm-hmm. it puts it all together. And the DVD shows not just the clear drawings and sketches of what it was like at that last day, but we also have a live session on the DVD, which Dick Allgaier is actually doing the remote viewing live under totally blind conditions, and to watch him do it and say, what is that? It's underwater, huge pressure. And then he describes what's underneath, where the sediment is, where the bedrock is, and the buildings that are underneath the water. I mean, he described it, and you can just see on his face, he's saying, that is one weird place. Where in the heck did Courtney Brown send us? I mean, he says he doesn't know where they sent us, but he knows something about it. And he describes it. It's all on the video. Uh-huh. And so that is to die for. I mean, that is one of our absolute best projects. And the thing that makes it so important is what actually happened. Now, the scientists, mainstream scientists, actually are looking for something that would explain something very unusual. 70,000 years ago, there was a bottleneck in human history. 70,000 years ago, some volcanic event occurred that wiped out every human on the planet except for approximately just a few thousand surviving pairs that were breeding. Let's say 2,000 to 4,000 pairs of people. Now, there may have been more survivors, but they weren't having babies. So among the survivors that were having babies, the pairs, there's like 2,000, 4,000, 6,000 of them. Mm-hmm. And we are all, this is really not much in dispute at all, we are all related to the same 2,000 pairs of people. that survived whatever it was that happened 70,000 years ago. Now, the mainstream scientists like to call this the Toba catastrophe theory, which is T-O-B-A in reference to Lake Toba in Indonesia, where they think there might have been a large volcano that erupted that wiped out humanity back in those days. But they don't know. So the reality is, what we do know is that this ancient civilization, which really wasn't so ancient, only 70,000 years ago, was very much like us. They were maybe 100 years more advanced than us. We're very close to what they were. And they had a very clean form of crystalline energy, which they used in their reactors. But they were also going after other energy, energy from the center of the planet. So yes, James, what they were doing is they were digging. They were digging into the planet, and they were digging in with these huge drills. They had regular computer interfaces operating the things just like we do. I mean, the sketches of it, the pictures are clear as day, and they were digging in. But you have to understand, James, I'm going to say something now that people just need to understand. This planet is not a good planet to have a long-term civilization on. This planet, you all think of Earth as like the cherished planet. It's really supposed to be a planet for botanical and zoological reasons. I mean, you should be raising plants and animals on this place. This is not a planet that's really good for a long-term civilization. We have pole changes, we have pole shifts, none of which are in dispute. We have major climatic differences, we have very volatile weather. What you basically have is every 3 to 20,000 years, something big happens that disrupts the entire society. And we are basically an 8,000-mile diameter balloon. And inside the balloon is all molten rock. And the surface is like an 8-mile thin crust. Well, our ancestors, only 70,000 years ago, decided they'd like to tap into that crust through the crust and get into the molten core in order to tap some of the energy in it. And that's what happened. They popped the damn balloon. So what happened is when they hit the balloon, when they popped it with their drilling stuff, it was like a balloon. You know what happens when a balloon, you pop a balloon?
Yeah.
You have any type of crack in the surface, you get a huge volcano. Well, this was not a small crack. This was a huge thing that they drilled in, and they saw the response, the movement of the lava themselves on their own computer screens. They couldn't believe their eyes. They couldn't believe what was happening. They even had a leader, like a president, civilian leader, that was led by military people. We have the sketches of it clear as day. It's on the DVD. The leader was actually led to a secure bunker. Of course, it didn't, by the military. It didn't save them, however, but it was just like we do it today. I mean, everybody was wiped out. Secure bunkers didn't matter. What basically happened was there was this huge volcanic eruption that produced a hole in the planet the size of Australia. I'm not kidding, James. It was huge. If you look at the remote viewing data, it produced a big pop. And what happened was it was like a huge nuclear explosion, but it was volcanic. And what happened is parts of the, if you let a lot of pressure out from one spot, other spots are going to collapse. And so some other spots on the planet sunk. And that's what caused the area 1,000 miles west of Spain and Morocco to go down. That's why it's 3 miles down under the water now. Because someplace else on the planet had this huge eruption, lava flowed out, producing like a vacuum, and other parts of the planet just collapsed. They sunk in. Now, they actually knew this was going to happen. They had like a few days warning. Why? Because we have the whole, you have no idea what military grade remote viewers are like until you look at these data. Once you look at the DVD, it all becomes clear. These military grade remote viewers actually witnessed the last few events, the last few days. The people were told what was happening. There was announcements brought, put out in loudspeakers. People gathered outside in order to hear these announcements. They knew the end was come. They actually saw on the computer screen, the scientists who were operating the experiments actually saw on the computer screens what was happening. They actually had a few days to prepare. And what they did is that they took people, mostly women, pregnant, childbearing, and fecund women who could bear children, they put them on boats, and off in the area that's now off the coast of Morocco and Spain, about 1,000 miles west. They put them on boats. They had a few men on there, but they were mostly just to man the boats, to do the sailing. They packed women onto these boats because they knew this was a potential extinction-level event in advance. And then the land went down, the huge levels of water came up, inundating absolutely everything. The same thing happened down near what we now call Antarctica. There was a huge collapse of land. Some of the stuff is still on the surface of Atlantis, of the Antarctica, covered in ice. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you dig into some of the ice, which is really deep, you'll still find those buildings and in Antarctica. Which is why some of the projects are digging. You know, it's very difficult, even for secret projects with a lot of funding, to dig in Antarctica. I mean, the weather really is not good. Yeah. And so you have this, you know, huge level of archaeological stuff that is frozen underneath the ice, but you also have a lot of stuff under the ground as well. A lot of the technology is still there, and in the stuff that's under the water 3 miles deep off the coast of Spain and Morocco, you have a lot of buildings and other stuff that's underneath the surface that is still there. So a lot can be dug up if we had the capability of getting down 3 miles and doing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is, and some of the things are still giving off some energy, meaning it's not just like everything's dead down there. There's still stuff down there that's, you know, buzzing. So.
Yeah.
So, but this is really good because this is not a situation where we just have remote viewing. We have really clear Google Earth imagery, really clear. Plus, completely unbelievable, in my opinion, explanations that, you know, wave away those pictures, dismiss those pictures. And then we have really good, in addition to really good imagery, we have really good remote viewing data that captures everything that we see in the pictures, meaning vast levels of ruins and other things underwater, deep down under great pressure. The remote viewers captured all of that under totally blind conditions. You have to actually watch it, especially to see the actual session by Dick Allgaier on the DVD in order to really appreciate how amazing these remote viewers can be when they are that good. I mean, even I sit back, and I've been doing this for better part of 2 decades, I sit back and say, wow, when I see some of this stuff. Anyway, this Atlantis project is arguably our best project, and it comes off the heels of a couple of very successful other projects. We've done a lot of stuff. We've investigated a base on Mars, a technological base on Mars that is active and in use now. We've done a project on the origin of the asteroid belt that used to be an actual planet. We confirmed a theory that was developed and fully fleshed out by Thomas Van Flandern, a very mainstream, now dead, but a very mainstream astronomer who used to lead his Department of Celestial Mechanics at the Naval Observatory. We just finished our climate project. We had a huge project that took a year for the Multiple Universes project, and that experiment plus all of the data are published in a leading peer-reviewed journal. So we come off of an extremely successful set of projects, and this Atlantis project is arguably one of our absolute most important. And the results are really, really interesting as well as spectacularly good.
Yeah, I've got a quick question. It seems, as you're saying, that we seem to repeat the past and do the same thing over. And
yeah.
Over in the Gulf there, you know, where we did the same thing, created that huge deep well. And
yeah, now that was digging small scale compared to the digging that they did in Atlantis. So if you look at what the actual DVD, if you actually look at the DVD and see, the actual remote viewing sessions are available just on the website for free, but we put it all together and organize it and present it and show you all the pictures in the proper order in a sort of a spine-tingling way on the DVD. And when you watch it, you realize, oh, we know how to dig, but this is like a level of capability of digging that's about 100 years from what we are now, which is not far. Uh-huh. In terms of evolutionary time, 100 years is nothing. So we're really there already. But anyway, that's what they wanted to do. And by the way, this was secrecy cloaked science.
Yeah.
The same type of secrecy cloaked science that we're doing now. And it destroyed our civilization in the past. We don't need to talk about Atlantis as somebody else's civilization. No. We now know the story. It was us. It was our civilization. And we destroyed ourselves with secrecy cloaked science. And we could do it again. That's why it's such an important thing. That's why it's so important for people to actually see the DVD, to actually understand completely, and to show it to their friends, to actually get that information out. So secrecy cloak science is not a good idea. Now, understand that scientists don't like to have people looking at what they do, nor do government officials that have these programs that they support. And it's understandable in one sense. They want to do what they want to do, and if people look at it, you'll see public that really doesn't understand science very well. You get prying eyes, you get a lot of questions being asked, and you get a slowdown sometimes of some of the science. So, is that a reason for not disclosing to the public what's being done? You have to understand, it destroyed our entire civilization. If that's not enough of a demonstration, that you have to have a public outreach for all science. You can't just do stuff secretly and then say, it'll be okay. The imbeciles out there that are in the public, they don't need to know what we're doing. They don't understand it anyway. That doesn't work. That killed everybody on the planet, that type of thinking. The reality is you have to have a public outreach for science. You have to educate everybody along the way. And you have to understand that when we deal with a level of science that has a capability that we're developing now, responsibility comes with that capability. And the responsibility is that we have to be responsible for the rest of the planet. And doing things that are potentially threatening to the rest of the planet is not okay without having other people sort of involved in the process. As much as you may not like prying eyes and bureaucratic oversight and project delay, there is nothing you can do other than to educate the people about your needs. And so this is and to do it the opposite way, it will just kill us all. It kills the very people who are doing the science. I mean, the scientists themselves died. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that they just killed everybody else. They killed themselves. So, you know, it is messy to educate the public. But we are doing that at the Farsight Institute. We take our experiments, and rather than just publish them, we drag everybody along with everything we do. We show them the data collection process. We let them get involved in the collection and the actual verification of the data. And then we let them misunderstand our results. And then I have to go on radio. I'm sort of the front man. You know, we have a lot of people that work with us here, all volunteers. But you know, like a rock band has a front man. For example, Steven Tyler is the front man of Aerosmith. And, you know, John Bon Jovi is the front man for Bon Jovi, and so on. So I'm sort of the front man for the Farsight Institute. I'm the guy who has to go up there and explain what we do, but that's my job. I'm the director of the Institute, and I'm the person that's going out there. And people do misunderstand it, but that's part of the process. I will explain something, and people maybe with the multiple universes stuff, even it's hard for physicists to wrap their heads around the multiple universes stuff. So it's going to be hard for everybody to do that. That's my job. That's part of it. That means you have to explain it, let the misunderstandings occur, explain it again, until people finally get it. I mean, it took Einstein and his stuff for relativity decades before people finally sort of got the idea of what relativity actually meant in terms of black holes, in terms of the slowing down of time, and sort of all this stuff. So that's what all of science needs to do. We need to actually have this outreach, just like we're doing here at Farsight.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It seems like this ongoing pattern of, you know, power over others and secrecy and just the unbridled greed and the other programs, you know, versus the people that, you know, are service oriented, that want to empower others, and
Yeah, I think what basically we're going to be finding out eventually, and this is not dealing with any project we've completed, but I hope at some point we will be able to sort of investigate this more. Mm-hmm. But I suspect what really we're dealing with is people repeat themselves, and I suspect we are going to find out that we all came from another civilization, or many of us came from another civilization somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that we went through all of these problems before in that other place, and we're repeating ourselves. I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, if our architecture resembled the architecture of that other civilization somewhere else on another planet, something, you know, far away, a far away place.
Yeah.
And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the problems are repeating themselves. And there actually is some indication that, in fact, this planet may be, it might have started out as a sort of a vacation resort, later turned into a refugee place for people from that other civilization, and then it might have actually turned into a prison planet. So we've gone from a vacation resort to a refugee center to a prison planet. And I'm not saying we know that for a fact. I'm just sort of saying there's a lot of indications that seem to suggest that the problems we're dealing with now are really problems that relate to this other civilization that we came from somewhere else a long time ago.
Yeah, so, I agree. You know, the ancient Lyrians, that we go back to the ancient Lyrians, you know, who a lot of people go to the Anunnaki, and that's some very deep information. But, you know, I've been looking at this and I go, you know, the gods were pretty messed up in the past. You know, we're exhibiting all the same issues.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out. I think we're going to find out that all of these gods were just extraterrestrials that came down and messed around doing things. I mean, if you look at the Old Testament, one of the most violent books in all of literature is the Old Testament. And where people were being, you know, were told, you know, do this or else, and, you know, conquer these people and do. I mean, it was a rough place. I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah looks like that was very close to what we would now call a nuclear attack on a city that, you know, was wiped out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that was one of the conclusions of Zechariah Sitchin. So, I mean, this is, you know, this. It really looks, and if you think about Moses going up and getting the Ten Commandments, that would have been a real easy thing for an ET to do. Just to land, show off some lights, and say, have your people follow these rules. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I mean, I think that's what we're heading towards, that type of a thing. By the way, I should say that this archaeological stuff that we're dealing with Atlantis, follows in the footsteps of other people who have been doing revolutionary archaeological stuff that all is pointing in the same direction, that what we're taught in universities and schools about archaeology especially is simply not true. And I'm referring to now to people like Michael Cremo, who wrote the book Forbidden Archaeology. It's a real fat book that's filled with references. I mean, it's a real gift that he actually went to the trouble to do all that. And also things like Robert Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, and he has got a new book out called Forgotten Civilization, where he also talks about evidence that civilization dates way past the dates of like 3,000 years ago, pyramid type stuff, that the pyramids and the Sphinx and other evidence of civilization go back at least 10,000 years or more. And so really what we're really seeing now is clear evidence that the binders or the blinders that are put on scientists with respect to what is allowable to think with respect to archaeological stuff is simply really screwy. Yeah. And that what you get in the universities is nuts with respect to that type of stuff. And that it's only a matter of time before all of this new information comes out. But it's going to take some doing. Anyway, the Atlantis follows in that type of footsteps of describing this stuff. And if you combine the idea of the Toba catastrophe theory with this, it really looks like it happened about 70,000 years ago. Because that's when you had that huge bottleneck in genetics.
Yeah.
Where everybody that's alive today is related to the same 2,000, 4,000, 5,000 people that survived back then. about 2,000 to 6,000 pairs of people, I should say, that survived back then. And, you know, that because of a huge volcanic event, that matches what we're getting so clearly that it's very likely that that is what happened.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we're hitting the end of the hour here. And so, I mean, this has been a fascinating interview, and I know we've only touched the surface, but to get to the rest of the information, I know they can go to your website and get the DVD too.
Absolutely. We've got tons of stuff. Remember, we're a nonprofit, so we have mm-hmm. so much information that's just free. We're the largest venue of a science shop on remote viewing that you can have out there, including free training materials. I mean, the whole thing. So, but it go to farsight.org, www.farsight, farsight.org, because we're a nonprofit. Make sure, all listeners, I want to encourage, go to the bottom of the nav bar and subscribe to the free newsletter. Just put your name and email address in there. No spam. We don't give the email addresses out. That's the only way we let people know what we've done. And then look at our Atlantis stuff. And by the way, when you buy the DVD for Atlantis or our other DVDs, you're supporting us. Money from those DVDs is how we fund our projects.
Right.
We're a nonprofit. And so unless people, we only have a couple thousand bucks in the bank, unless people give us money or they buy the DVD, there is no way we pay the bills. So
yeah.
This is how we do it. This is how we have these projects. And so not only is a DVD a spine tingler, something that you really need to watch and show to your friends, you have to get the word out. But
yeah,
if you want to help us, that's the best way to proceed.
All right. Hey, well, again, I can't thank you enough. It's been a riveting interview, and definitely we need to get this information out so we don't repeat the past, and we'll do all we can to support you in that effort.
Great. Well, look, James, I want to thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure, as always, to come on here on your radio, and bless you, and it's been great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm your host, James Gunn. Looks like we've got to sign off. We're running out of time. And folks, get that DVD, check out that website, and hopefully we won't repeat the past. And, you know, just think about it. You know, maybe our gods were not all as pure and loving as we thought they were, and let's not repeat the same patterns that they left us with. So anyway, this is James Gunn signing off. Have a great day.